We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Lauren Bailey.
And I'm Nick Kane.
And thanks for listening.
We are live in your ears for podcast 17.
And we're in the same room ears for podcast 17, which is
you have
weird,
big ears.
But kind of that. Exciting too.
It is kind of exciting. It's lovely to be in the same room. You know, we were saying before how it does get hard sometimes when you're not actually together and feeling the magic that happens in these interviews.
Now, so lovely to have you. Thanks for joining me in Melbourne.
It was 25 in Sydney.
Don't talk to me about the weather in Sydney, Nick.
No, I think we should move on. We should get straight into your month, Lauren. How's it been?
Oh, okay. Moment of truth. I have been thinking about what I was going to say today about how my month has been.
Yeah.
I mentioned to you just before we recorded a couple of things I was thinking of saying and not being sure about their value add. And you have encouraged me to be open.
So
I guess it makes me feel a bit vulnerable. And so that's why I'm dancing around the issue. But I have been through one of those periods. I'm not sure if everyone goes through them, but I know I have a lot of friends who are artistic who I've mentioned this to who have felt the same way. I feel like there is a cycle we go through, and at some point you go through the bottom of the cycle. And during that point you're wondering why you do what you do. Are you doing what you want to do? Should you be doing something else? Why does the world hate you? What is going on? And I have been dealing with a bit of that over the last month or so. And I think one of the things that's been interesting for me is that it's not necessarily linked to anything rational. This is what I've learnt. Because while I was not feeling great about life, there were some things about my life that were a bit stressful or a bit challenging. And those things are actually still true now, but I feel okay about life again.
Yeah. You just needed to go through a period where your mental state was sort of just coping with where you were, or your emotional state? Was it all three, you know, all two or three states together as one?
Just the having a bad United day. States of Lauren.
But because it was more than one day, essentially, wasn't it? It was, you know.
Yeah. I kind of felt that three or five weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not to say I was miserable all day, every day.
No.
Just that I really felt challenged. And so every day I was like, okay, cool. You know, time to get back on the horse, figure out where I'm at. And I wonder if part of that was coming back from Bali, where I had 12 days of solely focusing on my craft and my creativity and coming back in such an amazing place to a very cold Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And refocusing on how to pay my rent.
Yeah. Life admin.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. Life focusing on my life admin.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were some other things that happened that I won't go in, you know, just small personal challenges. But I don't know what the takeaway is.
Well, this is the thing. When you broached this idea with me that this is what you felt for the month, and I said, hey, maybe you should share that with the team, I don't think that it's necessarily to have an outtake for people, but just to say to them, hey, I've been there.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people listening, like you said, artistic people that have been through these troughs, it's human nature to go through these troughs, right?
Yeah.
But just to know other people are going through that, that's part of what this podcast is about too, right? It's about the community and showing people that you know, as a team, we're better together. So does that make
That definitely makes sense. No, I'm just like sitting here and completely reflecting on what you've said.
Mm.
I mean, I believe that it's unrealistic that we're going to be happy and motivated and feel like we're moving forward all the time.
Yeah.
I understand that we need to go through those phases. It's just, you know, when you're in it, you don't necessarily feel like sharing where you're at, particularly because I like to be positive about life, so I don't like the idea of bringing people around me down.
But it is hard to see the light at those points too, where it feels like you're so in it. That it's like, how do I get out of this? But time...
But then, and as happened this time, just one day you will feel good again. There we go. That's my takeaway. What about you, Nick? While you've been off in sunny Sydney, what has been happening?
Yeah, well, a lot. It's been a topsy-turvy month, but I did want to talk a bit about creative partnerships. And not this particular creative partnership, okay. But just what happens when they don't work.
Right.
The reason I bring this up is because I've had a few projects this month where I've had to be the instigator on saying that there was particular creative differences or that the projects weren't working. And I don't know about you, Lauren, but I don't do that often. So when you do get to a stage where you feel like you have to be the instigator in that particular process of saying, hey, I don't think we should work together.
Yeah.
You tend to be bound by fear a little bit of, is this just me? Am I being a diva, for lack of better words?
Yeah.
Is it, whatever it is, you start to go, well, should I share this now? Should I sleep on it? What should I do? And of course you sleep on it and it's still there. And what I found was that you had to just be honest with what was going on in your head. And if it felt right, deep down in your gut, you know that feeling deep down in your
Absolutely.
Gut where you're like, this isn't working and it's a long road ahead and I don't know if I want to go down that road.
Yeah.
It's really important that you stop it as soon as possible.
Exactly. It's really important that you can find the courage within yourself to make that decision when it needs to be made.
Yes. And reading the Brave book last month, it was an interesting read, and it's funny when you read a book like that and then you can start to relate it to times in your life where you need to be brave. It's so easy to read a book and then not act on any of that, you know? Like, it's easy to go, oh, yes, I could be brave in that scenario.
Oh, that was useful to think about.
Yeah. But to actually then put it into practice is the hardest thing. And she did talk about train the brave, remember? Just little acts. So I guess what I wanted to take out of this was that it's that idea of sometimes creative partnerships aren't going to work, especially when we're in a scenario like we are, Lauren, where we love to create content. We love to get out there and do our own thing. Not everything's going to be peachy keen, roses, all that type of stuff.
You know what that makes me think of? Okay, one of the things this month that stuck out to me around the time I started feeling more motivated again was a podcast I was listening to. The guest on it said, to be something you've never been before, you need to do something you've never done before.
Ooh, I like it.
So I've written this on my whiteboard in my room, so it greets me when I go into my office. And I just thought of that when you mentioned this, to have the sort of creative partnerships you want to have and achieve telling the stories you want to tell, you have to do things that you may not have done, but you have to do things.
And sometimes it's hard.
You have to step up to the bat.
You do. And especially if there's things where you might be not wasting your time, but using your time ineffectively, where you could be doing something that you really, really, truly believe in, and that people are all on the same page.
Yeah. Because I just think, we get so focused on, yes, I want to create this. Mm. And we continue to try to find ways to make something happen, even though we might be best served by
banging our head against the wall.
By doing something else.
And you find that the projects that are actually streamlined and that everyone's on the same page, they're a much nicer experience anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're the ones you want to aim for and not necessarily take everything that comes along. Very nice.
Good to see you, Nick.
Yeah, it's good to be in the same room, right? Look at this magic. Probably a lovely time, though.
Perfect.
We should get stuck right in.
Perfect time.
To our next storyteller guest.
Yes.
He is Brent Logan. He can tell you all about what he does, but it's based in the heavy metal genre of music. Please enjoy Brent Logan, Podcast 17.
Hi, Brent.
Hi.
And we are, of course, here today with heavy metal artist Brent Logan. And we are, Nick, where are we?
I can tell you where we are. You're in wintry Melbourne, and yes. we are at Brent's house in his lounge room.
Yep.
Actually,
in my lounge room.
Oh,
in Toongabby.
Nice.
Toongabby.
In
sort of northern Sydney?
It's Western Sydney.
Western Sydney, there you go. I'm still learning Sydney, but it's Western Sydney, Toongabby, and we're sitting in the lounge room here, which, why, Brent? Why are we sitting here?
But that's usually a pretty good place to do some thinking, right. And it's where I pretty much spend most of my time when I'm not sleeping or working.
Right, and so, this is where you write a bit of your music?
Yeah, pretty much. Usually sort of write in here. Sometimes if it's a nice day outside, I'll go out the back because I have a very big backyard.
I just saw it. It literally is like a K down the road.
Oh, wow.
It takes me about 2 hours just to mow the back lawn.
Don't tease me too much, but was it nice and balmy in Sydney today?
Yeah, it was pretty good, actually.
25?
25. We had 25 today.
Hard life, right?
So moving right along, maybe we can get you to read us your story, Brent, to get started.
All right. No worries. Well, I was born in 1985, and I grew up in a small town of 400 people called Moolamine in New South Wales, right near the Victorian border. I currently live in Sydney. I'm a youth worker during the day, and I'm frontman of heavy metal band Lethal Vendetta at night. I've been involved with music since I can remember. I sang in choirs as a young child and was able to learn piano and teach myself some guitar. I started playing in bands during high school. My first band was, funnily enough, was named Smackrod, and I also played another band called Maverick. These were my first experiences of writing my own lyrics and themes. In my 20s, I played in heavy metal band Arift in Mildura and Adelaide. It was then my songwriting became a lot stronger. But using influences around me, whether they be personal or fictional in final form. But in 2008, that was the year that not only my vocal style had changed, but my writing had changed also. I was introduced to concept albums and being able to use that influence to create my own concept stories to put into song lyrics, as well as keeping the influence I see around me to create my own lyrics. Last year, I started writing my very own novel, though it's a long process, so I don't know when it will actually be completed.
Ooh, good ending. leaving us hanging there at the end.
Well, that's fantastic. And I have a lot of questions regarding, the whole heavy metal world, because I'm a bit of a novice on this front. And also how being a musician fits in with your role as a youth worker. But let's start at the beginning. Growing up in Moolamine, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
What was that like?
It was quiet. It was actually really good. It was, obviously kids back there, they're a lot more free to be able to do what they want, ride their bikes anywhere they want, be home. You know, we didn't have to really worry about anything. It was just really good because there was a lot of bushland out there as well. A lot of places where you could just go and stand out by yourself and not see or hear anything.
So you had to make your own fun.
Pretty much.
And I'm saying that because I lived in a very similar area down the road, right?
Yeah. For those who are listening, one thing you need to know is that Nick and I actually went to high school together.
We did. And we stayed in touch. It comes out. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I just want to go back to your family for a minute. Yep. The musical side of things, was there anyone that inspired you?
My grandmother was a very good gospel singer. She sang a lot of hymns because she was also a Psy minister for the Anglican Church. My grandfather was also a really good country and western singer.
So singing was in your blood?
Pretty much. A lot of people in my family still do sing, but they don't sort of sing as much as what I do. But they can sing if they want to. Yeah.
There you go.
So you say you've been involved, obviously, in music as long as you can remember, and it sounds like music was all around you. I'm just curious what the highlights of singing in your school choir might have been.
Oh, back then. It was kind of funny back then because the primary school I went to didn't have any more than probably 80 students. You weren't allowed to join the school choir until you were probably, year three or year four. But the choir teacher made me join in year two.
Oh.
Which would have been controversial.
It was controversial. And I remember after a couple of years of singing in that choir, I was the one that had to do some of the solos in it.
Ooh.
When I was in year five, I was handpicked to go to this choral camp It was all primary schools in New South Wales. They were picking, hand-picking primary school students to go to this choral camp. And it was in a little place called Tumbarumba, which is in the middle of New South Wales. And we stayed at this resort, and all we did for a whole week was just sing. That's all we did. We ended up singing as a full-fledged kind of choir that you would see at the opera house. Can't really remember some of the songs we did, but I remember one of them was from the old movie The Mission with, what's his name? The guy that played Scar.
From The Lion King.
Yeah, from The Lion King.
Lion King reference.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I can't remember his name. I really should remember his name.
No.
So that in primary school is a lot of it. But when I was in year six, I remember it started to get a little bit more difficult to reach the high notes because my voice started breaking. But that actually leads into a lot of the singing that, that I've always wanted to do anyway. Yeah. So.
And how did that happen? So what was the point where, you know, you were singing in the choir, you were talking about piano lessons and guitar, and how did it all come together? It came together in the form of heavy metal music, really, didn't it?
Yeah, we'll see. I guess the way that I see it is that I think I've always sort of been loved even just rock music since a young kid. I remember me and my brother used to get up early in the morning and grab mum's Kiss Dynasty record and put it on the record player early in the morning, and even though we'd get in trouble with it. But we used to do that, but at the same time we used to grab the Phantom of the Opera CD as well, and I'd just sit there and read the lyrics as the whole thing would go past. But well, with heavy metal, I think it was always sort of been there. A lot of influences sort of come from some cousins and my older brother as well, because that was sort of around the time when Guns N' Roses was really big, Metallica was really big, Nirvana was really big. You know, and I even remember hearing that heavy guitar, I was always drawn to it.
Yeah.
So just as soon as I heard it, I was just like, yeah, right there. So.
And you're always a big person who wanted to study the sound as well, wasn't it? It wasn't just, hey, that's a great song. You wanted to know why it was great.
Well, yeah. I wish I would have done a lot more study on the theory behind it all, but turns out I have the attention span of a pea. I always just sort of like why that sound was there, but just some sounds you can kind of it sort of creates its own tone within the song, and it's and there's this particular is where it just sort of grabs you and on a, not just an emotional level, but also sort of like a fantasy level in some way.
Just before we get too far into the interview, as previously mentioned, the world of heavy metal is relatively unknown to me, apart from a bit of Guns N' Roses when I was in my early teens.
Lauren Bailey.
Woo, rocking out. But so,
learning about you.
For our listeners and my own reference, I found a site defining heavy metal music as synthesizing early rock and roll, hard-edged blues, and classical music harmonies with a nightmare.
Does that
sound about right?
That pretty much wraps it up, because, you know, heavy metal was created from blues. If you really want to look into the real depths of heavy metal, I'd tell you to get this documentary. It's called Metal Evolution. Yeah. It's about a 10 episode series by a guy named Sam Dunn. He every single episode is about like one part of heavy metal. So we actually, the very first episode is all about pre-metal. So it actually talks about the roots of it. And then after that, it comes into what were the sort of the first sort of heavier bands coming out.
Yeah.
And as we know in the public, the very first one was Black Sabbath.
Yeah. Well, we might link to that on the site for
my
downtime and anyone else who's interested.
And you did mention Black Sabbath, and if we go back to the origins of heavy metal back in the 1960s in Birmingham, it was a coming-of-age time where Black Sabbath actually did forge a bit of a sound, and they explained it as the clamour of steel mills that dominated the landscape of their hometown, which
That's
is,
exactly right.
I think, a really beautiful way to put it. Mm. And, I mean, heavy metal often addresses those socially taboo subjects, doesn't it? You know, it might be political corruption, it might be, you know, recreational drug use. As a songwriter... You know, what sort of stories are you telling through your music? Are they similar tones in the heavy metal that you create?
Some of them are. As I said, like, especially sort of through your teenage years, some of the stuff you listen to can be quite personal. or some of the stuff that you write can be quite personal. You know, for example, when I was in the band Smack Right, I wrote a song about a friend of mine who committed suicide.
Yes.
And that was, you know, that was one of the first songs I'd ever written. And I was only about 14, 15 at the time. But these days, you sort of have that sort of emotional influence. But I sort of tend to find that some of the writing that I do is, it's kind of influenced from either what I'm watching or what I'm listening to or what I see just, you know, in society, more or less.
Mm.
You know, for example, I've got a song called Battle War Cry, but then on the next one, I've got another one called Race Is Only a Name, and which is based around, you know, obviously race in society. I don't just sort of want to stick to sort of one subject.
Yeah.
I kind of want to sort of branch out and, you know, and just sort of have many different things, so it sort of keeps me fresh, and it sort of keeps people guessing on what I'm going to write next, I suppose.
And I do remember the days of Smack Rod, because I was obviously around at the time, and I had my own band called Masochist.
Yes, yes.
Which was a little bit darker than Smack Rod,
yes,
I think,
at
the
time. Yes, it was.
But I think the thing that I remember was that Smack Rod were streets ahead of most bands in the area.
Yeah, we did all right.
And I think that was not only for your own sort of writing skills, but also for your vocal talents as well. I particularly remember your ability to mould both a melody and a scream within, you know, a couple of bars, which is quite amazing. And not many people could do that at the time. So, you know, those vocal skills have obviously been important to what you do.
Mm.
Who influenced you in that way? Who was your main influence?
Oh, let me see. I think when it sort of comes to vocals, especially in my teenage years, I think it was probably about five of them.
Yep.
Kurt Cobain, for one.
Okay.
You know, because I've listened to Kurt Cobain a lot when I was a kid. Corey Taylor from Slipknot.
Yes.
He was possibly one of the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Davis from Korn.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely one. For the really high screams I did back then, I'd probably have to say Chino Marrero from the Deftones.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that's probably still an influence to me today, as he was when I was a kid, was Jon Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not expect that last one.
Yeah, Jon Bon Jovi, his singing is next to some of the best singing you'll ever hear.
Yeah.
So,
Isn't that interesting? Mm. And you've moulded five people there that are very different styles in a lot of ways.
Very eclectic.
And I remember in my teenage years, from what my mum says to me, I always tried to mimic what the singer did on TV when I was a kid. That's pretty much what I wanted to do. And I guess I still kind of do that because I use the influences that I hear and bring them into my own kind of singing style.
Yeah.
I don't like to sing just sort of one style. I like to sort of have many different ones because then it sort of keeps people guessing as well.
Mm.
I just wanted to say, when we say high screams, how high are we talking?
It's just like if you hear like a metal scream, it's just really high. I couldn't exactly tell you how high it was.
What we might be able to do is link to a bit of that kind of music. One I actually put in here as a example of a singer who could do both was Mudvayne, the lead singer from Mudvayne, who was fantastic at his doing his melody, but then would just deliver
screams.
And there's something about it, isn't it? Mm. It's not just a scream in the sense of the word. There's something. No. It's almost blood curdling at times.
It is.
Isn't it?
You can. I always found the screaming. You can actually feel their emotion.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
And it's controlled too.
Oh this yeah, it's very controlled.
If you do it right, it's not that bad for your voice, right?
It's not just screaming for the hell of it. Like it's actually, you kind of got to. It's exactly the same as singing, except you're actually screaming.
Mm.
You've got to have the right pitch. You've got to have the right tone. You know, so, and you got to know the right time to do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to sound all that great.
Mm. So Nick has told me that Smack Rod was, you know, pretty big in the area at the time, played at a lot of festivals. Mm. Was there a bit of a culture of heavy metal music in the area?
There was at the time, actually. I remember there was a little bit of a influx of it. Because around that time is what they call it now. They call it the new metal era. Was big back in those days. That was the days of, you know, Limp Bizkit and Slipknot and Korn and System of a Down and, you know, all those kind of bands were huge back in the day. And I remember just around that area, like, I remember town Deniliquin.
Yeah.
Deniliquin had a lot of big bands around at that time. cannot remember any of the names of them. I wish I did. But
it spawned the Flat Earth Festival. It really was did, yeah. Deniliquin?
Yeah, Flat Earth. I think they did about three or four of those.
Mm.
But yeah, around the time there was like a bit of an influx. I remember there was even a few in Kerrang too.
Yeah, so I think when it's a small community like that, it must be that people influence people and that a certain sound gets around and people enjoy it and grab onto it and start to create their own sounds, which is beautiful. Mm. I was actually thinking about that too. In Australia with music, you know, you've got Newcastle is a particular area where a lot of bands tend to come out of, Perth.
Yeah, Perth.
And, you know, Melbourne is, of course, in a north. Mm. There's a lot of bands coming out of the inner north in regards to Brunswick and those kind of areas. So it's interesting, isn't it, how the people in society in those smaller groups influence the styles.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. So somewhere in your 20s, you moved from Moolamine to Mildura and then on to Adelaide. Can you talk us through that?
So I moved to Mildura to study to be a youth worker. And I met up with some boys there that are, you know, still really good friends with to this day. It was in 2005 I met these boys, and they were the boys from A Rift, and they were looking for a new singer. One of the guitarists, Steve, was singing during the time, and no offense, Steve, but you really couldn't sing, mate. he'll get a laugh out of that. And so they were looking for a singer that could do my kind of style, sort of the clean tone and also the screaming. I might sound a little bit full of myself for saying it, but a lot of people around Mildura actually said we actually created the heavy metal scene in Mildura.
Awesome.
And because at the time when we were playing in Mildura, we played a lot of shows in Mildura that a metal band was not supposed to play. You know, it was a heavy metal band supporting Tim Rogers. We supported the Spazzies once. Even though Androids, that band that did Do It With Madonna, we even supported them once. Kiss Chasey was another one we supported. Body Jar was another one we supported. And as a metal band, you're not supposed to support those bands, but we did. As we ended up all of us moving to Adelaide to sort of, you know, make a bigger name for ourselves, I suppose. And it was a little bit hard considering not all the members were living there.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we did play some okay gigs, but I think what really happened to us then is that, well, I know for one that I was being influenced by something like musically different than what I usually was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really feel it the way that I used to. My singing style was changing as well.
Right. And is this when you said that your songwriting was becoming stronger? Is that period?
Yeah, in 2008. Yeah, 2008, that was the year.
And so what do you think that was?
It was, I remember sitting there at home one day in this old dingy house I was living in Adelaide, and I was sitting there and I had music on, and nothing I was listening to gave me that same feel anymore, and I'm just like, not even Pantera was doing it for me. And I'm just like, something's wrong if Pantera's not doing it for me. And then all of it, I remember there was a band from Finland, they're called Nightwish, and they mix in, they're one of the first ones to mix in classical music in with heavy metal, and their original first singer was actually a trained opera singer. I always liked them, and I thought, like, there's got to be more bands like them somewhere, so I started doing my research, and I came across a band called Camelot. They're from, they're kind of a mixture, they've got Americans, Germans, and Norwegians. They mix in the singing style of Nightwish. It's really, really good, and it brought me back to singing more classical stuff I used to do when I was a kid. It got me away from sort of the screaming stuff I was doing, the sort of Pantera style I was doing at the time. I just realized there was this whole catalogue of bands over in Europe that I just never heard of before. And well, there's some that I heard of the name, just hadn't listened to them, and then I just became obsessed with all bands from that sort of area.
And this was the start of when you got into concept albums?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there was Camelot themselves. They did a two album series. Yeah.
Can I ask what a concept album is?
Oh, a concept album is that every single song is like a chapter of a story. And the whole album is an actual story.
Cool. I like that.
So it's, yeah, so every single song is like a chapter of, you know, say if it's a novel, it's a chapter of a book. So a lot of bands in Europe, they write their albums as concept albums, and every single, they even create their own characters, they create all this kind of stuff. Italian band Rhapsody, or they're now known as Rhapsody of Fire, they created their own characters, and one of them they created was Dagor, the king of the Black Mountain or something like that. It was was actually quite good, but there's a lot of fantasy they wrote about as well.
So it's almost like a book, yeah, in the form of music.
Yeah, pretty much.
And is that unique to heavy metal?
Yeah, it depends, because obviously there's a lot of different styles. A lot of people call that power metal. It's usually power metal or symphonic metal is what they usually call it.
Yeah.
And a lot of them in that kind of genre, they write their stories so well, and they put in a lot of time, a lot of effort, you know. And it's like some of the best music you'll ever hear. Like it's not your typical screaming stuff as what people see on the TV or on the radio. It's actually high quality songwriting, and it's, you know, I heard someone say once, it's like, because obviously Europeans have been quite known for, you know, for writers like Beethoven, Shakespeare, you know, the whole works. And someone said once that the spirit of those kind of people live in those kind of people in that kind of genre, because that's the kind of writing style that they're actually doing.
It's a progression.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. I think I want to slightly change tone, slightly for a moment, if that's okay. I actually want to talk about how your career as a musician ties into your role as a youth worker. Because I must admit, the youth worker thing is such a interesting, hard, rewarding role.
Definitely, musician and youth worker, definitely two intense career paths.
Do they intersect? How do you work with both of those together?
So the way that I see it is that obviously some of the young people look after, they do want to, you know, they obviously do are interested about the music side of things. Sometimes I'll bring out the guitar or, you know, do something, but it's very rarely that I do. I guess in some respects it doesn't really sort of intertwine in some way, because it's kind of like that I've got my youth worker here and then I've got my musician over here. It's sort of like two different personalities or something.
Right.
I wouldn't exactly say that it really has intertwined.
Do the kids think it's cool?
Oh, the kids love it. Yeah, the kids absolutely love it. As soon as they find out I've played in bands, they're just like, oh, where'd you play?
So it's a connector as
well. Yeah, it is. And especially when sometimes when I get young people that actually are into heavy metal themselves.
Right.
That has also helped. Just being a musician itself has helped. But yeah, it sort of has it sort of really intertwined, I suppose.
But so in terms of that idea of heavy metal being an avenue to talk about social taboos and speak out against things, do you feel like that drive to do that is perhaps similar to what drives you to be a youth worker or to
help? Yeah, I guess so.
Tell those stories?
I guess I haven't thought about it that way, but it's because obviously we know there's a lot of, you know, a lot of problems in society these days. Usually, always is, but you know, with the young people, I guess it's they've got stories of their own that can be actually written into a song if possible. You know, so I obviously won't go into any of their stories because some of them are quite horrific. Yep.
But it is interesting that you're saying that, you know, they connect with the heavy metal and the stories are something that they can find. It sort of leads into this question of heavy metal music and how it affects culture and how it sits within our culture. Mm. What are the main benefits of heavy metal music in culture today?
See, heavy metal's always been kind of outcasted. It always has been, ever since day one. In the 80s, it was huge, obviously. But it's still very underground, and it's still a sort of outcasted. I think what it is what people don't realise exactly the actual people that are involved in heavy metal, just to see how intelligent most of them actually are. I've probably met more intelligent people in the heavy metal world than what I had at a university. And it's not just about being book smart, it's about being socially smart, you know. And I myself find being socially smart a lot more important than being book smart.
Yeah.
So, you know, like as a society, like it does have a place, but I still think it's still treated, we're still treated as outcasts sometimes. Not just because of the music itself, because of the way we some of us dress.
Yeah.
You know, like having the long hair, having a beard, and, you know, some people got the spikes hanging off their arms and all the black clothes and all that kind of thing. I think as myself being involved in that culture, it's a sense of freedom, to be more or less, because in the heavy metal culture, is what we love to say, there's no race, there's no religion, there's only metal. And that's actually a line of one of my songs I've written.
Nice. So,
yeah. There you go.
And because Nick, you have talked quite a bit about how important the idea of community is in the heavy metal world, and how that's a real support. Is that a thing for you, Brent?
It's a real community.
Oh yeah,
isn't
it's
it?
A real community. It's yeah. it's not just music. It's it's a lot of. A lot of good friends. Even if you don't know someone and you're at a concert, he's your mate for the night. you know, like it just that's just the way it goes. Like it's you know, the biggest heavy metal festival in the world, which happens in Germany every year. It's called Wacken, and it's like it's kind of like a heavy metal version of Woodstock, and they get. Like so many people there, and their tickets sell out in like half an hour every single year. People from all over the world go to this festival, and I would love to go to this festival, but I'd never have the money. Like as a community, like we're all very close. Like it's all very safe. You know, people see mosh pits on TVs, but you're actually more safer in a mosh pit than what you are at a rave party, because everyone knows how dangerous those things are, but. Ever since the death of Dimebag Darrell, who is the guitarist of Pantera, people are a lot more safer in mosh pits because people are going to get hurt, and we know people get hurt. And as soon as someone falls over, they pick them up. As soon as someone looks like they've had enough in there, we lift them up over the crowd so the security can grab them and so they can get out of the pit and take a breather.
Isn't it funny, this idea of the perception of the dark clothes and the long hair and the beard and the scary look versus this idea of a caring soul that actually will help you in the mosh pit, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a real sort of, you know, that don't judge a book by its cover.
Well, that's exactly
kind of idea.
Right. And that's why, and I think sometimes as a young teen, when you feel isolated as a young teen, you tend to go towards that kind of culture because in some respects, the culture's kind of isolated in itself. But when you're sort of involved in that culture, you're not isolated.
No.
You love the same things what everyone else does. You're exactly the same as everybody else. You know, people are just looking out for you.
Yeah.
And it's
And isn't that the reason that, you know, the thing that we always bang on about with storytelling, that human connection?
Yeah.
I found in my research, I found a quote from Tom Morello. Nick's laughing because I always get a bit excited about my research.
Good research, though. I like this.
A quote from Tom Morello, who, for people who don't know, is the guitarist of the metal band Rage Against the Machine. And he said, "There's something in metal music that speaks to the reptilian brain. It doesn't speak to the intellect. It speaks to a thought process that's on the surface. There's something that connects very viscerally with heavy metal music, that it just feels awesome." And like, it just seems so important to me that whatever art we are putting out into the world, it is about connecting on that visceral level.
Yeah, when you sort of have that kind of connection, it's you obviously get quite excited, and you actually sort of feel like you just don't feel alone, and like it's really mainly the music of it all is, you know, obviously what brings everybody together, but the actual community of it all is actually what makes it what it is.
Yeah, and makes it continue to stay alive to
this
day.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that it's beyond ideas of ego or intellect or whatever.
Yeah. Though, with that being said, there is some egotistical metalheads out there. We like to call them elitists, is what we like to call them. You know, they're kind of like, no, you got to listen to this, otherwise you're not a heavy metal fan, or you got to listen to that, you're not a metal heavy metal fan. Yeah.
Hey, so, good. So I want to move on to present day now. And we spoke a bit about your first band, which was Smackrod, and your time in Mildura and Adelaide with A Rift. But, of course, your latest musical project is with Lethal Vendetta.
Yep.
So these guys started out back in 2011.
Yeah.
And they were looking for a new direction.
Yeah.
And they've consequently brought you on board. So it sounds exciting. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the aspirations you have with this band?
See, when I first I first saw them with their old singer and their old drummer around the start of last year. They were very quick, they were very heavy. I was a little bit too quick for my taste, but it was still pretty good. Their singer, he was actually really good. He actually, the way his style was a lot like what mine was when I was younger, like the clean style and screaming style. And he was actually really good. Though when he left, he ended up leaving, and they were looking for a new singer, and I thought, I'll just go try it out, see what they want. And they gave me a few songs, just a few cover songs to practice on. So I practiced on those and went in for the audition. And all well and good. I wasn't quite sure after the audition, though, because I think it was just a little bit too quick for my taste at the start. But we had a... the drummer actually ended up leaving, and I actually reconnected with Ben, the guitarist. He was telling me that he would like to slow things down and sort of start all over again, start from scratch. Ben and I, we did a lot of writing together. Jay, the bassist, was also involved. We had another drummer come in for a bit, but it didn't quite work out with him. But we didn't exactly get the drummer we got now until start of this year. So we started writing. We got about six or seven tracks at the moment. So some of the ones
and is that with the concept of idea?
Not all of them are.
Or are they individual?
These are all individual ones. I do have another concept that I wrote, which is actually separate from the band, which I can talk about later if you want. It's for example, they're all different themes. I've got one song, Battle War Cry, which is like a medieval based theme. It's a being in a battle, obviously. And we've got another one, Deserve to Die. I know it's a very horrible title. And the lyrics are actually very horrible as well. All I'll say is if anyone's seen the movie, A Time to Kill, you'll know exactly what that song's about.
I was just going to ask, from an artistic creative perspective, where do you go imaginatively to find the inspiration? These are some like big themes you're dealing with here. And there's a large fantasy, seems to be a large fantasy component of a lot of the work. Mm. The imagination is vast. Like, where is that coming
sometimes,
from?
Sometimes, it's kind of like sometimes I have about 100 ideas going through my head. And it all sort of comes about what I'm really influenced much at the time. I'll sometimes get this feeling if I'm either listening to something or watching something, or if I'm just walking down the street, I'll get this feeling. And I get this sort of, I might get a song title, or I might get the first few lines come out straight away. For example, what I can say about that is one I wrote called Final Conflict. The reason how I got that was I was listening to a song called Damien by the band Iced Earth, and I had it stuck in my head. And there was one part of the song where he actually sings Final Conflict. And then I just sort of had that stuck in my head, and then I wrote this song called Final Conflict, which was influenced by the TV series Spartacus. So
it's coming in different forms, this inspiration.
It sort of comes and goes. So yeah.
So off the back of that now, I guess looking into the future, what's the next step for your storytelling, do you think? You're gonna stick with some more concept based album type songs? What does the future hold, do you think?
See, I don't sort of plan on what I'm going to write, because I find if I try to plan what I want to write, it's not going to be any good. I tend to sort of wait till I'm really heavily influenced by something, and then I'll write it, and then it'll actually sound all right. Sometimes what we like to do is I call a verbal vomit, if you will, and where I'll just write anything on a piece of paper, and I'll see if anything in it actually sounds okay, and then if it does, then I'll sort of take that little section out and then I'll sort of build on top of that.
Well, that's interesting that you use that. I mean, that's an acting technique too, in regards to this idea of the subconscious and finding stuff within the subconscious. So, it's interesting that you can use that technique as well.
And of course, your very latest project that you've got happening at the moment is this novel that you're writing.
Oh, yeah.
And we realise that sometimes it's too early to talk about projects, but can you share some of that
with
us?
This is actually going to sound really strange, because I actually got the idea from this from a dream that I had. I sometimes have these dreams where, like, you know, they can be, you know, I'll sort of wake up and I'm just like, yeah, right, how'd that happen? but this one was actually, you actually pretty much call it a bit more like of a nightmare, more or less, because it was a dream that I had that, it was a girl who actually got kidnapped, and
you're not going to give us the whole thing here.
No.
I just didn't want
spoiler,
you.
Spoiler alert.
No, nothing like that. But I remember in the dream of this girl just running through this field, and I kind of used that to create to create the story. I'm not really sure how long it's going to be. I haven't sort of written anything to it for quite a while. But I know at the moment I think I want about 8,000-9,000 words on it. And I sometimes got to reread it, obviously, to sort of get more into it. But I'm just going to sort of keep it there and just sort of add to it every now and again and sort of see how it goes. Like, I don't know if I'll even, you know, send it anywhere to get published or anything like that. I just sort of read it because it was just something in my head that I wanted to sort of get out, I suppose.
Yeah, great.
And is it interesting to be telling a story in another medium?
Yeah, like, it's writing a story is always something that I've always wanted to do, because it's, songwriting, you know, obviously when you're even just writing lyrics, like, it's obviously you can tell a story, but sometimes it can't tell like the little in between the lines kind of thing, you know. And I guess this is what I really wanted to do with this novel. And with the novel, it just sort of started coming to me. Like, I started writing it, but then it's more and more and more ideas just started more coming to me as I started writing it. So I like the direction that it's actually going towards.
So, Brent, pal, mate. Yeah. I'm sort of looking back on this podcast now and going, if we sort of went back to when we were sitting on the Murray River, you know, all that time ago, I won't be too specific.
Yeah.
If you looked back and you thought about that young Brent,
mm-hmm.
and you looked at your life now, how do you feel about what you've achieved so far?
Well, let's put it this way. I never, ever thought in a million years I would end up in Sydney as a young kid. That Sydney was just way too big for me. As a youth worker, I never expected to do youth work outside of Mildura. I always thought I wasn't good enough for it. Then I did it in Adelaide, and now I'm doing it in Sydney. Which is like, wow. I never told you this, man, but I remember when I was in high school, I said to myself once, ever since I was 10 years old, one day I'm going to be that older guy with long hair and a beard, and I'm going to be that heavy metal guy. I remember telling myself that when I was about 10 years old.
I could honestly...
Oh, my goodness, that's awesome.
I can honestly picture you saying that.
and even when we were at school, like... So one day I'm still going to be that long-haired guy. I am going to be that guy.
I love that. So, do you have any advice for heavy metal artists or musicians of any genre who are starting out in the industry, other than visualizing themselves many years from now with long hair?
I just say, just be true to yourselves. Don't try and imitate everybody. Don't worry about what people think of your stuff, because it makes sense to you. It doesn't have to make sense to anybody else if it doesn't want to. If they're just starting out, if you think it's not good, it maybe is good. Maybe you're too hard on yourself. But all I'll say is, you know, as you're just starting out, just keep practicing, because trust me, it only gets better. So as you get older, you get different ideas and you mature, and so does your songwriting, or any writing in general becomes mature as you mature. So just keep at it.
I think that's one of the beautiful messages of heavy metal music too, isn't it? This idea of individuality.
Well, that's right.
That you can be an individual, and that no one way is necessarily correct.
That's exactly right. You know, because it's I think that's why heavy metal culture is the way it is. You know, it's because you are an individual there, and it doesn't matter if you're from Korea, or it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're from Afghanistan. Like, people are going to love you. You know, there's no, like I said, there's no race, no religion involved in heavy metal. It's just one thing, and I think that's why it's kept alive for so long, because, you know, back in the day, it wasn't supposed to be around for that long.
Mm.
But we're sitting here, what, 40-odd years later since Black Sabbath came out, and it's still there.
Mm.
So, yeah.
We'll be for a lot longer.
One other thing, too, is that heavy metal people are very passionate.
Mm.
They're very passionate, not just about music, but just about life in general.
So this is our final question, mm-hmm. and we always ask this
at
the end of the podcast. It's tailored for that particular individual. And this one, the question for you today is, and please take your time to answer this, don't feel like you have to answer it straight away. If you could pick one heavy metal song as a soundtrack to your life so far, what would it be?
Oh, wow, man.
And take your time.
This might take a while. See, the funny thing is, way that I see it is, I can't actually just say it's the one song, because the actual thing itself is actually a concept album.
Okay, we'll allow it.
Yes, yes.
So the whole thing is actually a concept album. And it's by a band called Iced Earth, and it was written by their guitarist, John Schaefer. He calls it the Something Wicked Saga, is what he calls it. Starts off with the original inhabitants of Earth, called the Sessions. All of a sudden, they've seen these ships come down from the sky, shoot them all out of these people called the human race, came down and wipe them all out. And then 10,000 of them, they escaped, and the high priest, the high council, said, there's a prophecy. From 10,000 years from now, a child will be born, and he will be the chosen one. And what the High Council had to do is they had to call the clouding, is what they called it. So they wiped all of mankind's minds and created Christianity, created Islam, created Buddhism, created all these religions to separate the human race, to get them ready for the chosen child. So when he was born, they called him the Antichrist. And then he sort of took over. But then at the end of the day, after he did everything, he did his trials. He realized that the human race actually has potential to be a good race, and so that's pretty much sort of how it ends. But the reason why I sort of say to that is because here I was in a little town of out the middle of nowhere, right? And at that time, my mind was cleared because I didn't know anything else outside of it. And as I got older and moved to different places, I'd realise that, wow. And sometimes I sort of feel like the chosen child, because I've gone around and done this and all that and all that kind of thing. And it's I have a lot more knowledge now. And so it's, I guess, kind of sort of relates to that. So, yeah.
The chosen child.
Yeah.
His chosen child's name was Set Abominay was his name.
AKA Brent Logan. No, particular case.
Yes. Thank you so much for sitting down us today, Brent. I had no idea how storytelling was so endemic to the whole world of heavy metal. It's really exciting.
And that's the thing, because not many people do. Yeah. And it's hopefully this will teach some people out there that it's not just long hair and people headbanging and screaming and getting drunk. It's a lot more to it.
It's been an absolute pleasure to go down memory lane with you and get back into the old heavy metal days.
Old heavy metal days, mate.
Yeah. Excellent, Brent Logan. Thanks for being on the Active Storytelling.
No worries, thank you.
Takeouts, Nick?
Yeah, takeouts. I want you to go first. I feel like you've got one ready to go. I can see your face.
Yeah, sorry. Maybe it's a little bit naive of me to inquire about the whole idea of a concept album, but I've never really thought about this before, and I'm fascinated with what Brent was saying about how obviously a concept album is like a book, and so every song is a chapter.
Yes.
Obviously, when a musician puts an album together, they're thinking how the songs thematically link and lead one into the other and what the order is. But I've never really thought about each one is a chapter and the whole thing is telling, you know, one big story as well as the individual ones.
It's, yeah, different perspective on how you can create the music, isn't it? So it's really lovely. You know, what I got out of that is really around this idea of enjoying being back in the heavy metal scene. Just speaking to Brent, you know, I've changed my music tastes over the years. Now, every now and again, I'll be old school and I'll go back and I'll listen to, you know, Murder Dolls or Mudvayne or Slipknot, which they really were formative artists for me when I was growing up. But you find you run in different circles, and I haven't seen Brent for years and years and years. And I changed my music taste, complete musical revolution in regards to the way I looked at things. But coming back and chatting with him and seeing his passion and knowing why he enjoys the music really kindles this fire within you.
I could see. I could see you light up.
And it's something really beautiful about that, isn't it? That, yes, you look, I'm not saying that heavy metal is my favourite genre in the world now, but I know that I can enjoy it and that I can go back there. And I always say this idea that music is bookmarks in your life. Yep. So you can go back and I can think about being 16 and, as we said, being in the mosh pit at a Slipknot concert and, you know, it being one of the most amazing and, to be honest, safe places I felt.
Yeah, that I'd visceral been. Connection.
Yeah, because of everyone working together. So it's, that was just beautiful.
Yeah. So, Nick, got any crazy good recommendations for the month ahead?
I do, actually. I've got one from Belvoir Theatre, which is a show called 17. And I have a little story around this particular show. I actually booked tickets to go see this last week. And I was super excited because I read the tagline, which reads, "A bunch of theatre royalty playing teenagers." There's a great cast. It includes Barry Otto, Maggie Dentz, and a heap others, as well as director Anne-Louise Sarkes, who I knew from my Fringe days when I was back working at Melbourne Fringe Festival. And it's a piece that takes these wonderful performers through being on the cusp of adulthood. And it basically looks at being human. So I was really excited about this show. It's written by Matthew Wittet. It's a piece written where these performers basically are taken back to the cusp of adulthood. This idea of being 17 again. And these are all advanced in age actors, I would say, is the best way to put it. It just sounded like a lovely, positive piece of theatre. So I went to go see it last week and still not knowing Sydney very well. I may have left my run a little late. So I booked my tickets. I was ready to go. I got in the car, did not count on Sydney traffic, and I missed the show. I gave a little donation to the show and I'm not going to get an opportunity to see it for a little while longer, but it is running. It's running from the 1st of August to the 13th of September.
Okay.
Bit of time to go back and watch the show, but it's Belvoir Theatre 17 is
the show. Fantastic. Well, it's interesting that you have a theatre recommendation for this month because I also have a theatre recommendation.
Ah.
Savage in Limbo is opening on August 18th at Q44 Theatre.
The wonderful
now,
Q44.
Yes, listeners will know Nick and I both, we've interviewed ensemble
we're
member,
fanboys and girls
amazing director, directress, Gabby Rose Carter, and we just love the work that Q44 Theatre puts out into the world.
Yeah, and Savage in Limbo is a great
It's a great play. But also I really love, one of the focuses of Q44 is this idea of making theatre accessible.
Yes.
And without flipping the shows completely or anything, they try to have a contemporary take on the work that they do. And even the write-up on their website, in the write-up it says how the show is about a group of desperate 32-year-old former classmates tirelessly caught in the limbo of their unexceptional lives. Aww. And that to me, I don't know, this struck a chord with me because it's a great play. There's a lot of themes going on in there, but I just think that's a really easy way to go, yes, this is something that I can access as an audience member.
Yeah, lovely.
Of course, the wonderful Andrea McKinnon stars in Savage in Limbo.
Played a great character too. I've seen a little bit of a snapshot into this character early days, back when I was in Melbourne. And I think that was sort of the genesis of her playing that character at the time. So you're in for a treat. It's going to be exciting.
Just to touch briefly on our blog that will be coming in the next couple of months. Yes. I know Nick and I have mentioned this in the last few podcasts, but we really are on the cusp. And one of the things that we're hoping with that blog is that you'll be able to find out about great theatre stuff that is happening, not just in Sydney and Melbourne where we're based, but from experts all around the country.
The entire nation.
So, Nick, how is your month ahead looking?
Month ahead is looking good. I am feeling a little bit overworked with everything at the moment.
Yeah.
But I have a few goals for this month that will mean that hopefully by sort of mid-September, I'm going to get to have a little bit of a break. I feel Ooh. Like I need a bit of a break. So
a travel break?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I think just a mental, emotional, physical break. And it might be sort of, you know, 3-4 weeks, hopefully, is the way I'd like to do it. But there is some exciting things happening before that. I'm going to shoot some more Comedy Gold for Sportsbet. That
yes.
relationship oh, continues.
I have something to look for, viewing to look exactly. forward to.
I am going to watch Brent at the Lewisham Hotel on August 15th.
Oh, fantastic.
So really looking forward to going to see that. I also am calling this Voice Month, where I want to go and work on my voice a little bit. And I found a teacher in Sydney called Gabrielle Rogers, who I am going to go and have some lessons with around my voice. Just some, like, training, just some,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like going to the gym, just going to the gym for my voice.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a few little things there that I really want to get stuck into. Obviously going to see 17 again and maybe leaving a little bit earlier this time. So there's a lot going on, but hopefully, you know, mid-September to late September, I can have a little bit of a break.
Yep.
What about your month, Lauren?
Well, I am not looking forward to a break. I mean, I would look forward to a break if I were having one.
If you had one.
I am very much in the process of figuring out my work prospects yep. for next month mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in terms of, I guess, what I would call my day job, although obviously over the last year I've been trying to think of my day job as something that is intrinsically aligned with everything else that I want to do mm-hmm. in my life yeah, in yeah. terms of storytelling. Of so course. Rather than, I know as artists, we can often separate the two into, oh, my day job is a means to an end to the thing that I want to be doing.
Yeah.
So that's all still a bit unknown, mm-hmm. but I might have, well, hopefully I'll have more news on that next month yes, on what I've been yes. up to. But also something I've been thinking about a lot, particularly in light of what I said at the top of this podcast about how I've been feeling of late, is this idea of thinking about motivation and inspiration and how we continue to provide that for ourselves in our everyday lives.
Yes.
And one of the things that I have realized since we last recorded is that when I wasn't necessarily feeling great about my life, I would look at the things ahead of me that I had to do for the day. And even though some of them, when I'm feeling good again, are things I might have been quite excited about, I looked at them as things that I had to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And then one morning I got up and I did a bit of journaling before I started work for the day,
okay,
which I actually really enjoyed and which yeah. inspired me.
Nice.
And then when I looked ahead at the things that I needed to do for the day, I actually felt inspired about the things that I had to do for the day.
So do you think that the journaling helped you process?
Well, I think it was that I got up and I did something that I was excited about doing.
Yes.
So I'm setting a little there mini project for myself yes. in the month ahead is the idea that when I get up in the morning, I'm going to make time for something to do at the beginning of the day
mm-hmm.
that should excite or inspire me. And see how that benefits the rest of my day.
So other than journaling, so not necessarily just an artist diary kind of idea, it could be anything that excites you at the start of the day.
It could be a fitness thing. Yep. It could be listening to music. It could be journaling. Ooh, it could be some actual writing.
Yeah.
When I was in Bali, I was doing a bit of drawing.
Yeah, nice.
I haven't Fantastic. Done any of that for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's one of the things to focus on.
Yeah.
But I remember a year or so ago, I was saying to myself, I'd heard somewhere this idea of what gifts am I going to give myself today?
Nice.
To sort of rephrase yeah. the idea of what do I have to do today? Well, yeah. What am I giving myself? Well, if I do this, I'm learning yeah. this and that sort of thing. And like so it. Sort of with that approach, what little gift am I going to give myself each morning that will hopefully enable me to feel more positive, inspired about my day?
Great.
So
I love
that's
this
my
concept.
That's my little project.
This has been my inspirational gift today. That's been nice. I might have to start that. You know, it's about sharing ideas, right? You
Absolutely. Know? Well, I'm more than happy for us to both give it a shot and yeah. and maybe talk next month about how we went.
Yeah, I love the concept of it. Fantastic. And it doesn't necessarily have to be at the start of the day, or does it help to be at the start?
Well,
of the
day? this is what I'm thinking,
yeah.
that it sort of sets your frame of mind. I mean, nice. I know it's not a new concept.
Mm.
If you read something like The Artist's Way, it suggests that you do...
Mm.
diarise every morning.
Yep.
But it's just my take on it to see if it has a positive impact.
And I like
on
the
life.
Gift naming of it too. I think that's a really beautiful way to frame it.
So, yay.
Exciting month ahead.
Yes. In the meantime, you can find us on everywhere online. iTunes, Facebook, About Me, SoundCloud.
Twitter. Have you already said Facebook?
Facebook.
Say it again. Why not?
Facebook.
So, and also give us feedback. There's a survey out there.
Yes.
We always love to hear ways that we can improve the podcast. So please go on the Facebook. On the Facebook. It used to be called that. It's not anymore. It's just Facebook. And take the survey.
Yeah.
I think there's a link on our website too.
There are links everywhere.
Links everywhere.
Take the survey and feel free to share inspiring posts on Facebook and write to us and tell us what you want to hear about and all that good stuff. Yeah, just write to us.
Yes. Go start on. The conversation with us so it's not just us rambling on as we normally do.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, have a great month.
And continue to join us on the act of storytelling.